Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
It's Alan, Judy, and Rex. That would be the Media Project. That's how you know us, of course. Here we are at the Media Project from WAMC and Northeast Public Radio's posh studios on Central Avenue in Albany. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. Right next to me here is Judy Patrick, editor of the Daily Gazette from Schenectady.
You know, I'm really happy to be here today.
Well, we're just really mighty happy to have you. And down there at the end of the studio table is Dr. Alan Shartok, CEO of Northeast Public Radio, columnist, commentator, professor emeritus, a gentleman with a tie that matches his coffee mug today. Look at that, black and red, and really quite dapper, sir.
Just like a newspaper. Black and white, red all over. Yeah.
Except we're not anymore.
I'm really glad to be here, Rex. And
I
want you to know how the configuration of our little gathering here every week is. Mm-hmm. I sit very far away from you because I was told that somebody said to you, why don't you just reach out and smack them?
And today it's a good idea because he's got a little bit of a bug.
So it sounds, huh? That's a little something there. So we'll keep you down at the end of the table, the better not to nail us all. But, you know, we really ought to talk about, while we're here, we really ought to talk about the visit to Albany of the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District, which is Manhattan, Preet Bharara. He finally made a trip up here, his first since he took that job as the chief U.S. prosecutor in that area, where he has brought 11 major political corruption cases involving state legislators, most recently winning convictions of the two leaders of the state legislature, Sheldon Silver of the Assembly and Dean Skelos of the Senate. And he came to town and did a number of appearances, including a speech to the New York State Conference of Mayors. He was there here for the swearing-in of a new chief judge. He came to do an editorial board at the Times Union. And then he came to WAMC, where he did a forum that you co-sponsored, Alan, with some of the good government groups around here. And I thought it was interesting. He said a number of things about the media in both the places where he was in public and in private. And so why don't we take a listen to Preet Bharara being interviewed by Alan Shartok, talking about what he considers a problem with the media and some of the value of it. Let's take a listen.
So there's a problem with the media, which I say often has a role to play. The politicians themselves have a role to play in self-policing. Prosecutors have a role to play in getting rid of the bad apples as appropriate. The public has a role to play because they choose who to elect. They can choose to have a constitutional convention if they want or not. And the press. Now, the best use to me, given what I do at the moment, is investigative journalism. And there are cases that we have brought in the public corruption realm and otherwise. I know people will appreciate this. Literally get started because we open up a newspaper and there's a great columnist at some paper or investigative journalist who writes, there's this bad stuff happening over here and it seems credible. We open an investigation. And that's a remarkable thing. You know, a free and open press can almost do as much, and in some cases more, depending on the circumstances, that any prosecutor can do to shine a light on things. And part of what we care about, it's not just holding people accountable, which is important, but exposing the truth. You know, journalists and prosecutors and investigators share a number of interests, and one of those interests is the truth. I'm happy, for example, that in some ways, this might sound an odd formulation of it, but you'll understand what I mean, that Sheldon Silver and Dean Skelos went to trial, and they didn't plead guilty. So everybody could see all the evidence that we had. And everybody could see how the system was betrayed. And everybody could see how the oaths were violated. And that's an important thing. And so when folks in the press take a gander at some problem, you know, public mischief especially, that's a great service to a lot of people on its own. Because sometimes if people have some, you know, shame and self-respect, they may alter the process. They may alter their practices. the side benefit is sometimes it opens up a criminal investigation for us. My worry is, and I've said this before, my worry is that the state of journalism being what it is and the impossibility of turning a profit based on old journalism especially affects, as far as I can tell, especially affects investigative journalism generally, because that's a very expensive proposition. It takes a lot of investment. And even more importantly, affects sort of small-town investigative journalism. I don't think you have as much of a problem in New York City where there's a million reporters, but there are a lot of places throughout New York State and the rest of the country where paper after paper closes down, or an investigative unit that had six people and could look at whether or not, you know, the local plants were, you know, giving us good water, or whether there was lead poisoning here or there. All these bad things that happen, often the people who are sounding the alarm bell first are the journalists. But as the industry and the economics of journalism change, I worry about that.
So there we have it, Preet Bharara with a little bit of analysis of the media. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, one of the things that I find so interesting is that he picked out these forms. I mean, we streamed it live. People could see him. People could hear him all over the Northeast. And it made sense to be here at the time. But he did make time, Rex, to come up and talk to you folks at the Albany Times Union, which I think says, I mean, it's the newspaper of this particular area, which makes an awful lot of sense. And it shows you that, once again, that people really think that newspapers have a great deal of power, period.
It was great to hear some of the things he had to say about the importance of investigative journalism, the importance of local newspaper, and his concern about where the newspaper or the media industry is heading, where people are forced to reduce staff, and that means we have fewer resources to throw at this. But let's not forget that the federal government has not necessarily been friendly to journalists across the country who are trying to do this kind of investigative journalism. And that was not mentioned at all. It has come down hard on journalists who are using sources, and I think there are many in the industry who would say the Obama administration has not been kind to journalism.
Very good thought. Yeah, really good point. I'm glad you brought that up. And it remains to be seen, there hasn't been a push-come-to-shove moment in the tenure of Loretta Lynch as Attorney General, but certainly under Eric Holder, her predecessor. I think you're right, Judy, that it has been an awkward time for media relations, and it has the Obama administration has not been good about access to federal information.
Rex, what was so interesting in what he said is that quite frequently they bring cases based on opening up the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And that you guys do the work. So now, if Judy's point is valid, and I know it is, you know, and they're standing in the way of doing their investigative reporting, but he's also praising us or you for doing articles, investigatory articles. There's a little bit of a, you know, maybe dissonance there.
Well, two things about that. One, you're talking about somebody on the ground, Preet Bharara, versus
sure.
people at the top. And two, people like investigative reporting until their own ox is gored.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
He did make the point in our editorial board that was interesting, talking about how in the course of the tenure of Sheldon Silver, for example, that he was looking at, Shelley Silver was Speaker of the Assembly for more than 20 years. And he said, you know, his behavior shifted as the law changed because there was greater visibility, greater transparency of the allocation of money. And he said, as an aside, as a matter of fact, because of a lawsuit that was brought by your newspaper, which we did. You know, we had Times Union versus Bruno and Silver to get access to information on member items and forced disclosure. And by the way, the state resisted, refused to give us information under the Freedom of Information Act, a law. And when we finally got it, the judge ordered that the state pay our legal bills because the state had illegally withheld the information to try to nail us.
So is that still going on? I mean, is the governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, compliant with the best of the... Why are you guys smiling?
It's a big softball.
Yeah. Smack it!
And the answer is?
No.
You know, the governor has offered some, let's say, modest reforms of the Freedom of Information Law, which would include, notably, requiring a legislature to respond to FOIL, which the legislature has exempted itself, and nobody really thinks they're going to pass that. But nor has the second floor, as we refer to it in this state, because that's where the executive chamber is located in the state capitol, nor has the second floor been accessible in terms of making information public, and has frequently withheld and cleverly concealed information by pulling it off limits and taking stuff, for example, requiring that digital files be excised very quickly before people have a chance, I think within 60 days, before people even have a chance to know what might be in there.
The best of the not-for-profit lobbyists in Albany, the best of what we call the goo-goo groups, the good government groups, is a man named Blair Horner, who represents NYPIRG. Now, NYPIRG in the old days, I always had the image of one kid sitting down there with whiskers underneath a underneath a single light bulb, you know. But Horner has really done a terrific job. Interestingly, Cuomo knew that. And when he got elected attorney general, he set something up, Operation Sunrise or something like that, where everybody would have all of the information possible. Well, my friend Horner, who is terrific, was out of there, as opposed to some of the other Google lobbyists who I don't admire, was out of there within a year or two because he said, my job is over here. But I have a feeling something didn't go right.
Hmm. You could ask him.
I've asked him lots of times, and he's a man of great honor, and he won't say.
But in your effort to get the emails, it took a long time, right? And a lot of resources.
It takes a lot of effort, and that's, I think, Preet Bharara's concern, especially in smaller communities, where it's correct that investigative reporting takes time and effort, and sometimes you hit dead ends. And especially in a community that used to have a really thriving newspaper, but now has newsrooms decimated, it's really hard to do investigative reporting.
Well, that's not true of either of your papers. You both have investigative reporters working for you, don't you?
It's hard.
It's hard. You still have to fill that newspaper and that website up every day. And it's a monster that needs to be fed all the time.
Yeah. I mean, there's more stuff to cover than you can ever get to. That's the problem. But people expect it. And we know, especially because both Judy's paper and mine are trying to encourage people to pay us for the information that we uncover. That is, we're trying to get some folks to shell out for the digital information even. We know that what people want is that investigative reporting. That's what they're willing to pay for.
Well, I pay for it. I pay for it with your paper, and I pay for the New York Times every day. And
a lot of folks don't want to. A lot of people will complain. They'll whine to us that it should be free. Why are you charging me?
Well, everything should be free.
Oh, well, that's right. By golly.
We shouldn't have to pay those mortgages.
You know, I want to stop paying for my Honda. You know, that's ridiculous.
You drive a Honda?
I drive a Japanese car.
A very big, prestigious, one of the top icons of Albany. I would imagine you in a Cadillac, to tell the truth. Something like that. In my case, in my family, Roselle said Cadillac divorce.
Really?
Yep. She said divorce.
Well, I guess
D-I-V-O-R-C.
I guess we know who wears
driving gloves.
Driving gloves in that family.
Well, you certainly
good work, Judy.
you certainly do.
Thank you. So that was very interesting. Preet Bharara, U.S. Attorney from the Southern District. We should take a look here at a piece of mail that we got from Ann in Woodstock. A listener has sent us something. Alan, it says here.
Well, I do rate highly.
Alan, please, says Anne, don't dismiss me as, quote, one of those mean people, as you so often do when someone asks a question you don't like or that criticizes your policies. But is it really okay to use your station as a platform to promote your candidate, Bernie Sanders, the way you did on the Media Projects program, which is spelled, by the way, MME program, British spelling, on February 6th. I like Bernie, but lots of people prefer other candidates, but don't have the kind of platform that you have to promote them. Lots of them also contribute to WAMC. Does this seem fair, says Anne?
It's a very good question and a very fair question. I have to say that I said in the very beginning that I was going to announce who I was going to vote for, but that it should not be considered in any way an endorsement by the station. And I said it because I appear on several programs. And you know what? We've been talking about this for years, Rex. I think that people, reporters are going to vote, columnists are going to vote, and I think people have a right to know where you're coming from. Now, I know this is not a popular opinion, and I'm sure both of you will smack me for it.
You can reach him. Go ahead.
But, we'll smack me for it. But it seems to me there is a logic to letting people know where the person who is giving them the information, especially because I appear on several shows in which I'm supposed to give my opinion. But I must say, if you go back and listen to what I've been saying about Bernie Sanders, yes, I might vote for him, but I'm concerned, very concerned, that if he wins, a Cruz or a Trump may win as a result of that. And so I've tried to keep it balanced, but I also want people to know where I'm coming from.
Do you have to operate under any special rules as a radio station?
Yes.
We don't have these same rules in the newspaper world.
And by the way, that's a great point. It really is a great point because the press, you know, is entitled to all kinds of First Amendment freedom. Yes, we are not allowed to endorse, and we don't endorse anybody, ever. But we do talk to people, but I'm concerned about that. I mean, I don't want to endorse anybody. I don't think we have a place to do that. But I do think it's wrong to say newspapers can have a freedom of the press that radio stations, because they are government funded, because we get a out of
now,
our...
Now, that's not why. You're regulated because you're using the public airwaves.
Right.
That's a public commodity, so you have a license from the federal government to use those airwaves, and if you're using it to promote your partisan end or your personal goals, if you're not being fair to all sides, then, you know, it's reasonable that the taxpayers should, you know, have a say in that. That's, so that's why you're regulated.
Well, no, that's one of the reasons, Rex. Don't be snotty. Now,
I'm just explaining the intent of Congress and the Federal Communications Act of 1932.
32? Yeah, but I have to say that I don't like it. I don't like the fact that because they give you money, they feel they have a right to do that. You're right. You've made your point that it represents taxpayer money that comes to you. But at the day they tell us, you know, we're going to tell you what you can say and what you can't say on the radio, we're going to take your license away, that's scary.
Well, that's not going to happen any more than the Second Amendment people are irrationally saying that Obama's going to come take their guns away. You know,
well, you still
have the First Amendment.
Well, that's interesting that you say that, because there's something called the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And they had hired an ombudsman and said it wasn't right for me to both be the president of the company. And also, this guy wrote a column to which I said, I'm going to sue you. And I meant I'm going to sue you. And,
for expressing his opinion?
No. This was not an opinion, Rex. This is an official...
I read it.
It's
not an opinion.
This
was an official position, which they put him in, and said, you cannot, the way I see it, be both the president of the company and have an expression.
A political commentator.
Yes, right.
You are listed, sometimes you're listed as WAMC's political analyst, and sometimes you're listed as the CEO, and you, so you wear both hats. And,
I do.
And both that ombudsman and the ombudsman for NPR have said that you shouldn't do that.
Well, I'm not familiar with what NPR has or hasn't said. I can tell you this. NPR has never told Alan Chartok what to do. In fact, I've told NPR what to do and where to go on several occasions.
So you think they're wrong and you think that you should sue this guy?
Oh, no. They withdrew this. This went away. And
That's all that an ombudsman does is he raises a point.
Well, it depends. I mean, he's an official. He's working for a larger group. They have him there for a reason. And, you know, he's a professor who was up there in some north country place. I don't know.
I believe it's Syracuse University.
Syracuse University.
One of those schools.
One of those lesser schools.
So what constitutes an endorsement?
An endorsement does not
do an endorsement.
That's correct.
And so
we will not do that.
And what would that be? WAMC
endorses Hillary Clinton for president. That would be an endorsement.
But you saying, I think Bernie Sanders should be president.
No,
the CEO,
that's not what I said.
You're both the CEO and the political commentator, and you're saying you want Bernie to be president.
No, you guys can give me all this crap.
This is just nuance.
The fact of the matter is, I went out of my way, and always have, to say at the time, I said, you should know who I'm going to vote for so you can evaluate what I'm saying. And I happen to believe, by the way, that your people should do the same thing, but you're not going to because you're timid and cowardly-like. And you started it, as we always say, Rex. That's why. But I made it clear when I said that this is not an endorsement.
Well, the difference is we do tell you what our opinions are on the editorial page. Judy's paper and my paper both have opinion pages, and that's like your commentary. Our reporters do not express their opinions.
How about your columnists?
The columnists express their opinions. But that's what they're hired to do.
They don't tell you who they're going to vote for.
I think they can, but don't. But I don't understand the distinction. We're just saying an opinion. No, I mean, you're saying that. I don't think that your reporters, who are like my reporters, I don't think that you've got your news director here. I don't think he's on the air saying, here's who I'm going to vote for. And I run the news department here.
You're right. I know I'm out in a different place. But then that has never stopped me from giving my views on what journalists owe to their public.
Well, there you go. There is a point of view, ladies and gentlemen.
That's condescending and snotty, and you know it.
See, I am just announcing what it is. Dr. Chartok, who has announced that he's going to vote for Bernie Sanders. But
so far, by the way.
So far.
That's subject to change.
Well, yes, we don't know if you'll have a chance to. We don't know if you'll be in the race by the time you actually get to
vote. There may be that's right. There may be a primary, there may not be.
Who knows? If you have an opinion on this or anything else that you hear here, you can send it to us, media@wamc.org, media@wamc.org, and we'd be happy to hear about it. So, Judy, here we are, continuing into our careers. And Alan, the first insult that he offered us this morning, and there are usually several when we come in. Yeah.
And you deserve every one of them.
Had to do with our hair color. Judy and I are both sitting here with graying hair, even though we're younger than Dr. Chartok. But
And you're both very fine-looking people, and I made that point.
Very kind.
Distinguished.
The point is, of course, that the annual ranking of the most stressful jobs is out once again, and journalism gigs occupied more than one of the top 10 spots for the second year running. So what's going on? What's so damn stressful about being a journalist?
You know, and the article also gave us tips for making our jobs less stressful, but the point is we have more to do. And the time of the day is still the same. Our reporters have to tweet. They have to be on social media. They have to do video, audio. They have to think creatively about different ways of telling a story. And no longer can they just come back from an event and write sentences on a computer and file it. And we're done at 11 o'clock and the show doesn't go back on until the next morning.
And
it's
yet,
all the time.
And yet, Judy, the line forms outside the door for people who want these jobs.
People like it. Part of it is the excitement of it. I mean, people like that pace. The adrenaline kicks in. In the past week, we had a ridiculous night with one of the primaries that we had planned would be the centerpiece of the front page. And then suddenly, big news started breaking. We found out that what seemed to be the first birth of a child with the Zika virus had happened
right
in Albany County. We found out that the Albany High School vote was going on whether to build a new high school, and there were significant irregularities in the voting. There was suddenly a terrible homicide-suicide. A cop apparently killed his wife and one of his children and himself and set fire to his house. Not in that order, of course. And all of that was breaking while we had other big stories, and that's all happening late at night. And the pressure on the reporters out getting the story, on the editors trying to handle it, get the copy into shape, and the designers trying to make the page happen is quite significant. And yeah. I was at home late dealing with this on the phone.
Who's going to walk the dog?
But and nowadays, they've got to do more than just get the story. They've got to get it out in all these different platforms, and they've got to do it as quickly as they can and as accurately as they can. And at the same time, you know, engage with the audience in a new way, tell the story in a different way. Again, the line does form out the door. It's such an incredibly important profession. It doesn't pay well. You know, we're shrinking, but good journalists will always have a place.
You know, Judy, the other day I was sitting here interviewing a Representative Chris Gibson, who it looks like is going to run for governor. And sitting here running the controls was Ian Pickus, and he had his device, cell phone, in his hand, and he was
tweeting
the story as I was asking the questions. So before the program was over, there were tweets all over the place.
Yeah, oftentimes you'll have events where, like one of our reporters at the Capitol, Matt Hamilton, will frequently
Very good
use,
reporter, by the way. Very good reporter.
Oh, good, good. Thank
you. I want
you
to know
pass
that.
That along.
Yeah.
He will
Dude,
use,
you're the one it has to be passed along to. You're the chief.
Well,
I'm sure Matt will enjoy hearing it.
Matt will like to hear it too, right? We'll have to tell him to turn on the radio. He will often use Periscope software to do a live video feed of what's going on.
Now, for those people who listen to public radio and maybe of a little different age, Periscope means that wherever you go, you can do a live broadcast right there. Somebody who was sitting right here could put this whole show on Periscope.
Yeah, correct. They wouldn't get any viewers, but they could do it. But actually, and that was part of the conversation with Preet Bharara. We thought, well, maybe we'll Periscope it and put it right out there. And his staff said, you know, we'd prefer not. We'd prefer to have the
to wait till we get to WAMC
luxury. Yes,
where the real you know media people are.
Well, where he could be a little bit more guarded in what he says, perhaps in front of a camera than he was with us. So that way, it's.
Well, you could have done what you wanted, but he didn't have to come again.
Right, right. Yeah. Notwithstanding that, we don't do off-the-record editorial board meetings, though many people do. And it's just a difference in choosing how you're going to do things. Anyway, we've run out of time after this. It's true, we
that
have.
It can't be.
It can be true because we listened to Mr. Bharara, and we're very grateful to have had that. And so you guys will have to go off and do another show, and we'll have to ask our listeners to come back next week for more.
And Rex, thanks. I just want to offer a personal thank you for being so kind to me and never trying to embarrass me on this program.
Always happy to do my part, Alan. Dr. Shartok, Judy Patrick, Rex Smith here. Thanks for joining us on The Media Project.
Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people.
Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Full or part-time options, 518-454-5143.
It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.